This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined by our emergency management coordinator, Jimmy Cataline. Hello, Jimmy. Nice to see you.
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And we're going to talk today about the Code Red emergency alert system. Some people may be familiar with it. I have been in it a little bit, and yesterday, it was a Sunday afternoon, and I was getting weather alerts about fire danger, potential fire danger from through the Code Red system, but it is coordinated out of this office, the Emergency Management Coordinator's office. Is that correct?
Some of them are, yes. So like the weather alerts you got yesterday, those are coming through the National Weather Service. They actually have their own system that they can push things out through as well.
So for people who may not be familiar with it, can you describe just in very broad terms what the Code Red system is designed to do?
So it's a program that you sign up for. It's not something you're automatically enrolled in. And so it's a third-party company that we contract with to utilize, and it's essentially like a reverse cellular network system. So we have the ability to hit people in mass using their cellular sites to send text messages and or phone calls to their phones. Through the Code Red system, and it really depends on what they sign up for when they do choose to sign up for the Code Red system. So, like I said, it's something voluntary, and it's something I've tried to educate the public on, and I'm working on really kind of ramping that up.
So just to be clear about this, it's just to cell phones. It's not going to call your landline. It's not going to interrupt your TV or your radio signal.
In theory, it could call your landline and give you a voice message that way if you did put that phone number in. And it can send you an email. So it really depends on how you set up your profile when you enroll in the system. Or, like, if people call me and ask me to sign them up for it, what I'll do is I just enroll them in everything. It's hard to ask those questions and remember, okay, especially like if I'm out and about and I get a phone call to be ask somebody, hey, do you want text messages? Do you only want phone calls? Do you want email? So I'll just sign up for everything. That way it's more likely they're going to get whatever message we're trying to send them.
Okay, we'll come back and talk about some of the user aspects in a moment. But just looking at it, the purpose of it is to be able to tell people within Johnson County.
Correct.
Because this is a Johnson County contracted service. People within Johnson County about an emergency situation. What kinds of situations do you include in that category?
I mean, with Code Red, you can send out pretty much anything that you want. I try to reserve it for things that I feel that are important to the public, because I think if we send out too many messages, people will either shut it off or they'll start to ignore it. As an example, like you can sign yourself up to receive notifications from YDOT. But when there's closures on different interstates, and you can pick where you want notifications from, I get stuff from the whole state, and so there are points where I just start to ignore them because I get so many of them. The same thing with this. So the big things for Code Red in Johnson County are advisements of if the courthouse is going to be closed for business on what would be a typical business day, and that's generally from like inclement weather. But, I mean, it could be from a number of things. Months ago, there was a number of courthouses in the state that were getting a mysterious white powder sent to them. It ended up being nothing. But that's going to shut the courthouse down. And we obviously don't want to bring more people there, have people show up to do business and now potentially be exposed to something. So that's a good opportunity to use it.
So it's a quick and easy way of communicating with a lot of people about an incident. And I think there was a moment a little while back where the telephone number at dispatch, the phone system itself was not working properly for dispatch.
Right.
That would be, for example,
yes,
a way of being able to create a custom message that went
correct
directly out to a large number of people. Can you target individual smaller areas? So,
for example,
if we had a fire, like we just have, and it was in a particular region, you can create a smaller
right.
area within the overall alert zone.
Right. So, like in the case of the house draw fire, any of the notifications that went out were set up with what's called a geofence. So, I establish boundaries with geographic locations, right? Where I only want to target specific groups of people within maybe an immediate area. Like the group of people in this specific area is being notified because of their physical presence there as identified through their cell phone or their address, depending on what's registered, or both. And which is why a lot of people said, I didn't get a notification on that. I don't understand why. Probably because they either weren't physically present within that geofence area or their address is not registered in the system or is not registered in that area. And so I can target specific groups depending on those things. And like another example would be that officer-involved shooting in Sheridan. You want people to stay out of the area. You want to let people know there is a big police activity because you know that social media is obviously going to target that and really drive some information there. It's a really efficient way to notify people who are maybe entering the area that might not want to be there. Maybe it's a family with small children. When they enter that area, as long as that alert is active, they will get a notification saying like, hey, people within this area, this is what's going on.
So it's not just the address that you've assigned to it to when you've signed up and you've enrolled right. in the Code Red program, but also if you happen to wander in with your cell phone on right. into an area where that alert, so it can differentiate between those two.
Yes. Well, and when I make the alerts, I can put time limits on them. So like the house draw fire, I was using 4 hours. You know, I don't want to make it so long that now people are getting notifications if something's calmed down or moved away. And so those alerts, I would set time limits on them so that, hey, we got a couple of hours worth here. And then if we need to renew it later, we can. And one, like for that situation, the house draw fire, that was me in communication with like our sheriff and with, or the chief of police, or incident command that's, managing the fire. They would call me and say, hey, this is what we want. You know, they're going to give me a very basic amount of information, and then I have to build the notification. And so there's a little bit of a learning curve. Like, I did one for KC many, many months ago. It was the first one I actually ever did. And I forgot something very important, town of KC. So people that got that notification that weren't in KC didn't understand what I was talking about.
Okay.
So that's one of where I get immediate feedback from people.
Yeah, I'm sure you did get immediate feedback.
Right.
So
right.
That does actually raise the question of how do you decide? Is there a protocol? Do you have to check it off with anybody else who's working in the county? How do you decide what you're going to say to whom and when?
So, like for when Casey, that Saturday after the house draw fire had begun, a few fires had started, one of which was fairly close to the town of Casey. And so that was actually a phone call from Commissioner Novotny suggesting that we put one out, which is how I found out we had it going on in the first place, which, mm-hmm.
Well, there were a lot of other things happening
yes,
at that time.
Yeah. And so I called Under Sheriff Monroe and spoke with him about it ahead of putting one out because I wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page as what information was going. It's very hard to sometimes tailor a message like that and not create panic, which is what our goal was. We wanted people to understand that we were aware that there was a fire, that we had crews working on the fire, and just be prepared because we don't know what's going to happen, but please don't panic. And so it's very strategic. And with the Code Red system, depending on the type of cell phone, because as like the old flip phones, which are still around, and there are a number of people that still have them, you have to be very careful on your character count. You can only put so many characters in those messages that they're able to receive. A smartphone, I can send a huge message if I want. And so I have to be very strategic. So sometimes I have very limited information, and I might make different messages. One for like those older flip phones that can only receive 90 characters versus the smartphones that can receive 360. And then the email, which I can have unlimited. So I really have to think about that. And obviously, if time is of the essence, I don't want to sit there and construct three messages, so I might just build a small 90-character message. And then what I might do is just copy it to all three of them. And then what I tend to do is, what my standard practice is anytime I issue a Code Red notification, I'll also go onto Facebook, and I will put out a message on Facebook. And that is generally where I'll put more information regarding what's going on, because I have a lot more space to do so. I don't have to sit there and count characters, and I've already pushed out my Code Red, so I don't have to worry about time as much. It's kind of one of those things where it's a juggling game for a few minutes to try and get it out when it's critical, like in the case of the house draw fire. Because in that case, I was actually over at the shelter that I was setting up, knowing that we were having people leave their homes and we wanted to give them a place to go. That's a big part of my role in emergency management, is to set up emergency sheltering operations. So I was having to set up my laptop and my jetpack just to get on the internet to get that going. And it makes you scramble a little bit sometimes.
I'm sure. So what about people who, you know, may have some difficulty with, that eyesight, for example, you know, they may not read or other disabilities? Does the system cater to them?
Yeah, so there's different methods. So, like, there's the TDD option, and I always check that. So if people that have certain settings set up on their phones for those things, those should get addressed. They should get it in that format to assist them. And again, I'll send it out. Generally, it'd be a phone call, a text message, an email, and a TDD notification. So depending on who has what and what their needs are, they should be able to get it in one way or another, especially with your access and functional needs population, which is one of the things doing at the senior center, helping them sign up. I just set up shop over there one day, and they announced it, and I had a number of people come over, and I took their phone, and I plugged everything in on the laptop, and then we went through and actually listed the phone numbers in their phone. So instead of them getting a call from an 800 number you don't know about, it says, "This is Code Red that's calling me." So now you know that it's some sort of an alert.
One thing, you know, we'll talk a little bit. I hope you'll talk us through some of the ways that you can get on and sign up and what you need to be thinking about as you sign up. But security and cybersecurity is something which seems to be increasingly important to people. Mm-hmm. Can they feel secure and safe by signing up to the Code Red system?
They have obviously robust cybersecurity set up in place for those types of things. To my knowledge, they haven't had a breach. This Code Red is heavily used nationwide. The state of Wyoming, the Office of Homeland Security at the state level, this is the system that they use as well. And obviously they work very closely hand in hand with a lot of our cybersecurity partners, given the nature of the Office of Homeland Security. So this is not something that they would be utilizing if there was any sort of question about that.
Okay. So let's turn and look at the system itself. How do you sign up? What do you do? And is there any kind of user issues that people might need to think about as they're signing up?
Well, so my predecessor was very vocal about the challenges of creating an account and the fact that because it is a third party,
I will confess I struggled.
Yeah,
and I'm quite techie.
So and the thing is if you duplicate and your phone number ends up in there, it doesn't hurt anything. So I always try to tell people you're better off just signing up as a guest, quote unquote. But you want to make sure you're going to our system. So the easiest way to get there is if you go to the Johnson County, Wyoming website, which is johnsoncowy.gov.
And I'll put a link to that.
So when you go onto that page, you'll see a quick links bar right underneath this photo of this lake here. And you'll see almost over right next between resolutions and contact us, there's a link that you click Code Red. Then I'll take you directly to the page that'll sign you up for the Johnson County Code Red system. And then it gives you the opportunity to sign up and create a managed account, which, again, it's not managed by me. So if, like, you lock yourself out or if you have any challenges with it, you got to deal with OnSolve, who is the company that owns Code Red. I tell people to generally just go enroll as a guest. When I sign people up, that's how I do it.
Why are you saying that?
just because you're not trying to get back into an account that you could potentially be locked out of and have all those challenges.
I will say that I struggled with the password aspect, and I found that the interface for that was quite frustrating. Then I saw that you had posted somewhere about going in as a guest, and it works like a dream.
Right.
So that is obviously a little tip.
Right. And then the thing is no system's going to be perfect, and I think this is one of the more flaws of the system. I mean, everything else that I've ever dealt with it works well.
In terms of the communication, you've found it very reliable.
I've never had it not work. Doesn't mean that it will always work. Obviously, it's got reliance on critical infrastructure like our electrical grid and our cell network.
Yes. I think that's another point worth pointing out, that if you are out, if you have your cell phone on, but if you are out of internet or cell range,
right,
for regular cell range, not necessarily in the S, you might have SOS in those little bars on your phone, but you will not be receiving a code red alert.
Correct.
And you also need to double check the notification settings.
Yes.
In your own phone, and iPhones and Droids are all slightly different, so you have to kind of make sure that those are turned on. And you were saying to me earlier that if you transfer from one phone to a new handset and you do the automatic data transfer, that setting, if you've turned it off, will still be off.
Right.
And so you'd need to just double check that it was on again in your new handset.
Right. And that's the thing about the way that the phone, you know, especially your smartphone, that technology world works. When you get a new upgraded phone, it just clones over. And so whatever your settings are, that way you don't have to change and redo your background photo. If you've ever customized anything, it's automatically transferred over. And I think a lot of people know that. So your settings are going to remain the same. If at any point in time you've ever gone into your settings, and I'm more familiar with the iPhone world. If you go under notifications on your settings and go all the way to the bottom, there's like four different buttons that you can turn on and off, and that's Amber Alerts, you know, Emergency Alerts, Public, you know, Warnings, and Test stuff. You can turn those on and off. And so if you've ever gone in there and turned them off, if you're like, okay, I'm getting way too many of these, you're not going to get your code reds. And so that's something that you have to be cognizant of. And it's, if you're not getting those for some reason and you feel like, hey, I don't think it's working, that's a good place to start and look and see if there's an issue. The other thing is to go on the system and just refill out your information. It won't hurt to duplicate it. If your phone number ends up in there twice, it's not like you're going to get twice the notifications. But there's some important information you got to have. So like, you want your contact information, your first and last name, your address, and then there's a map here, and they want you to go and pinpoint where your home is. And this is where some of our more less technology savvy people struggle. So this is where I end up helping them. And then you can list a number of phone numbers. You know, it obviously starts with one phone number. You can check the box if you want text messages with a TDD, TTY, so that's your tone delivery for hearing impaired. You can check that. Pretty much anybody anybody at like the senior center, I'll sign up for that. The thing is if I get a phone call when I'm out and somebody wants me to sign them up, these are one of the questions I don't always remember to ask. The other big one that is a challenge sometimes is the mobile provider. I got to know who your provider is because you got to select it off of the list. And then you can add more phone numbers. You can add an email if you want. And then obviously you have to agree to the terms and conditions, which I think a big part of that is, obviously, like with your text messages, you know, there's going to be data rates if you're not unlimited and all that stuff. And then I think this is more or less them just covering themselves by you're agreeing to this, you're signing up for it, so you can't come back and complain that you're getting all these notifications.
But you try and have a fairly light touch, and for only
yes.
You're not going to get inundated every day with all sorts of little pieces of information.
Prior to the house draw fire, I'd only probably sent out two or three since like February.
So if somebody is not signed up to the Code Red system, especially if they're somewhere remote, and fire is still, you know, a very present concern,
right.
And you may be living somewhere out, you know, not close to neighbors, or it may be a time of day when there's nobody else around, and you're not signed up to Code Red, what happens about a notification? How are you notified that there is potentially an emergency incident in your area?
So, depending on the nature of it and the size and scope of it, I might do what's called an all call, where it would hit all the phone numbers in the system. And that would be warranted for, like, hey, you know, the courthouse is closed because of
XYZ. But how would somebody have got their telephone number in the system? Would they have had to sign up? I'm talking about people who may be, you know, reticent to kind of get onto another system and another kind of don't want the intrusion. Would law enforcement be sent out to notify people in those areas?
They do that. Well, you know, they proactively did that with the house draw fire. I mean, I can't commit and say they're always going to do that. You know, they're a separate entity from me, and they have their own marching orders. And having been in that world for so many years, it could vary from incident to incident. It depends on what the demand is that they have. You know, if they have the personnel to do it, I can see them doing it again.
Well, now I understand why you're trying to encourage so many people in our county to sign up, because it is a way of reaching people very efficiently and effectively with the correct information, and you would like everybody in the county to be signed up. So that you're able to communicate with them when there are these incidents. And as you pointed out, you can target very specific areas, so not everybody needs to know about everything. We have a huge geographical area.
It depends. It really depends on what's going on and the details of what's transpiring, right? So it might be an all call where it hits everybody, or it might just be a very specific geographic location. And I think this is where people get confused and say, because I got a lot of people said, I didn't get a notification about this house draw fire. My first question is, are you signed up for Code Red? If so, has anything changed? The second thing is, were you physically within the geofence area that I set up for that? Or is your home address listed in that area? Those are going to dictate whether you get it or not. Now, what we need to differentiate here on some of this, and I think there is other confusion, is for the house draw fire in particular, I issued 3 alerts, but those were outside of the Code Red system. They were actually a level higher, what's called the IPAWS system. It's Integrated Public Alert Warning System. You don't have to be signed up for that one. And that's the one that, like, on your television and the radio, once a month, those would, you know, go off, and it's got all that annoying, like, alarm sounds and stuff. IPAWS, if I use that system, which I operate through the same Code Red website, those will go out to, you know, anybody. And so there was a lot of people that were, like, on the mountain that were getting alerts on their television telling them that there was a fire. And so that system is really only specifically used for, you know, immediate threat. With the house draw fire, that was a very rapidly growing dangerous situation that was going to impact interstate, numerous homes, evacuations. And given the speed at which that fire was moving, you know, that warranted an IPAWS alert over a Code Red. Meaning it was going to notify people. But again, those also had geographic locations set up on those, so not everybody got them. But those, again, also had time limits. So, like, if I pushed out the notification at noon and I put a 4-hour time limit and you went out over there at 3 o'clock, you're still going to get the notification as long as you cross that imaginary fence.
Out of interest, how big an area had you geofenced for that notification?
Some of it, so that was coordination between me and whoever I was speaking to. Or whoever requested
it. And it was the wind was moving a lot, the very rapidly changing circumstances.
And to be really honest with you, the last one that I did, they had asked for a massive area to be done, and I pushed back because it was gonna impact almost KC at that point when the fire was moving north across I-90. They wanted like a 30-mile radius, and I said, I don't think that's wise. We're going into other counties now, which I really shouldn't do. I need to coordinate with them, which is exactly what I did do with them. I called them and asked them, would you be able to do some geographic areas in your counties because of the way the fire's moving? And they did. And that stuff really needs to be run through the sheriff's office, if possible, which in this situation, we were all working together, so it worked fine. But those geographic areas really depend on the nature of what's transpiring. And with the house draw fire, even with a radius that big, I mean, you're talking 60 miles end to end, that's here to Gillette. That was probably going to be too big, which is why I pushed back on it and said, you know, we need to consider dialing this back a little bit. And it's not that the fire is not dangerous, but We're going to end up evacuating part of Buffalo.
Well, you have a lot of people to manage.
Yeah.
And some people would be very concerned, but it would not be something that was enough of a threat to them at that particular point to warrant having to focus on that. You wanted to focus on the people who
people weren't entitled to the information, but like I didn't want to tell Richardson Park that like you might be evacuated when the fire is 20 miles away. And so it was more prudent in my mind to like let's dial this down a little bit. And what I ended up doing is setting up a geofence that went essentially from I-90 over at like Dry Creek all the way to the northern county border and all the way to the eastern county border. So that's still a pretty big area, but it was really contained to where the fire was and the direction the fire was moving.
Well, one of the issues you have to always consider, I would have thought, is that you've got these two interstates with traffic constantly intersecting.
Right.
You know, so you have a lot of people flowing in and out of an area. And, you know, the fire did actually jump I-90 fairly early on. And that must have been a concern. So you wanted to capture those sorts of areas. You know, for anything going forward, you would want to be considering where there may be people in transit. Coming through an area that was potentially hazardous.
Well, I want to say the second and third geographic, you know, the geofences I built for that were touching I-90. So anybody driving through there, obviously they end up closing the interstate, but they were touching I-90, so anybody out there was going to get those alerts because it was through the iPod system and not through Code Red. Which, you know, I think there's pros and cons to that, and that's one of the reasons I push back on the size of the area. You know, sometimes if you go too big and do too much, you're now going to create more panic and be less efficient. So, and I would rather do smaller areas, very targeted, very, you know, specific and precise, and do more than one as opposed to one big one where now it's more general and it's not very tailored. But if you go back and look at, like, the second one, that specifically talked to, like, Prairie Land Village. And that area, I had to very specifically target Prairie Land Village because the fire was right there. And so, like, that one encompassed Prairie Land Village and went all the way and stretched up to I-90 from there, which is, like, what is that, Dry Creek Road? And I forget the other road right now, but over there. So it is a little bit of a chess game, you know, and just being strategic with it. And, I mean, sometimes operating on that map and creating those geofences, it's not always easy.
Yes.
So can you
create anything other than a circle?
Yes.
Okay.
I can create polygons, rectangles, whatever shape I want. And so, like, I'll give you an example. The town of KC had a water issue months ago where a main water line got hit during construction, and they had to shut out water off for like 3 hours. So they asked me to put out a Code Red notification, which Code Red and iPods work very similar in the way that you design your alerts. I basically said, well, what's the area you want? Well, can we go 5 miles east of KC? Can we go like this many miles north, this many miles south? So it wasn't easy to make some rectangle that fit it. So I was able to just kind of go through and create a polygon where I just kind of click around and close the box around what we want. So especially like let's consider where I-90 and 25 merge. It's not really a perfect square. It's not a circle. But if we only wanted to touch the borders of some of those areas, I can create a different shape to really kind of fit into like the shape of those freeways and the land surrounding them. So it's pretty robust the way you can do those different things.
So as somebody who's receiving Code Reds, you're not going to be inundated with all sorts of irrelevant information. You can target it, and that's the way that you like to operate this, is to really be specific and targeted and strategic in the messaging. And you better to have a smaller zone with some really very important information in it than to have a huge zone with lots of blanket information, which causes more confusion.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking us through this. I will provide links to Code Red and also to through the Johnson County website as well, so that people can go and set up. But really, the purpose of this was that you want to encourage people to bother to do this, because it's a very important way of people being able to receive information that they need
right
in term for their health, safety, well-being and for themselves and their properties.
Yeah, and it's not even just emergencies. Like I said, the courthouse, I mean, every once in a while, we have a pretty wicked winter storm that blows through. I'd hate for somebody to try and muscle through that, however they do, however resilient people are, like, I'm going to pay my registration today, and show up, only go through all that, only to find out the courthouse is closed. And I know that, like, some people get really tired of some of those notifications, but they're, you know, what I ask people to look at is, it might be annoying to you today, like, it didn't matter to you, had no reason to know that, but there might be three or four other people that would have endured some dangerous conditions to get there for no reason. And so just understand that, like, we're doing that to, for those two or three people that would potentially go out in the cold for no reason. You know, we try to be efficient that way, but also just save people time. You know, if, like, if something's going on, if we got to shut something down, I'd rather know ahead of time if that was on my list to go visit there, or that was the destination I was going to go, or the route I was going to take. Now I know I need to go some other way.
But you typically, you wouldn't be including road closures in
COVID. No, that's a YDOT thing, and if you go to YDOT, there's a way to sign up for it, and I couldn't really walk you through it by memory, but that's not a bad thing to have either, to be honest with you, or just the Wyoming 511 app. I try to encourage all of those things. When I drove school bus, I relied on the Wyoming 511 app constantly. It's a really awesome app. It'll tell you what's open, what's closed, it'll tell you why. Generally give you duration as to how long you think it's going to be that way. And you can get it in text messages, you can get it in emails. And then you can go on through their app and you can actually look through most of their cameras and see what a road looks like. If I'm going to go over the mountain, especially in wintertime, I'm checking Wyoming 511 and I'm looking at those cameras to see, you know, if it's yellow going over there or orange. Okay, I can still, technically it's legal for me to go. What is the road? What does the pass look like? I want to see what Powder River Pass is looking like at this moment before I get up there.
Sometimes it's been bewildering to me as to quite why the decision was made to make something orange or yellow, and it doesn't seem to fit quite accurately with what you experience when you're there. So that is a very handy tool. I've used that too. It's,
right.
It's
and, very useful. And Code Red's very much the same. It's really there to inform people because it might impact the decisions that they're going to have to make that day or that week. It's a really good way of sharing information. But the thing is if it's like you're not getting a notice and you're hearing about something, what I would tell people that live around here is go to the Johnson County Emergency Management Facebook page. Typically, there's going to be something that follows up that code red. Like house drop fire, every time I put out an IPAWS or a code red, or if I had some important information in the first 12 hours of that thing, I was putting it on Facebook and give people, because the other thing is, and Code Red kind of helps fill this, just like Facebook does, if there's a huge void and something goes dark for a while, citizens are going to start filling information with whatever they hear. And I'll give you an example about that. You know, I periodically would go through Facebook and look at different, all some of the posts we made and see some of the comments. And somebody was posting about like a home that burned down during the house drop fire. We didn't lose it at primary residence, so we don't want bad information to go out, and this is a really good way to mitigate against that. And a code red's a good notification, like, hey, something's going on, stay out of the area, and then go to the Facebook page, and you might be able to get some more details about, okay, what's happening, how long is this expected, whatever information I can get, and I know is vetted or is reliable, it's going to go on there. Okay. Unless I'm told otherwise, like, hey, we can't post anything about this right now. And that does happen sometimes, you know, like I don't work for fire. You know, I'm there to support our fire crews, just like I'm there to support law enforcement. So if they tell me like, hey, we need you to dial back, stand down on social media, I'm going to respect that because they have, and as soon as I can transfer that responsibility over to somebody that is working for them, I will do that. And that was my goal with House Draw Fire. That's my goal going forward on anything. So.
Well, thank you very much for explaining the Code Red system and how it works and why people should be signing up and how to make it work. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for being here.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.